So I'm so excited today to be joined by Alyssa Lefebvre. She's the head of go-to-market at Aireon. And so, Alyssa, I wanted to give a platform as far as amplifying your message that I saw recently on LinkedIn. And I want to start off by asking you how you're doing today and what a typical day looks like for you at Aireon.
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. A typical day at Aireon is very different every single day. So being the head of all the go-to-market systems means I have a ton of different responsibilities, things to do. I tend to have a lot of meetings. I work with my team to talk about different business requests that the users have asked for both Salesforce and HubSpot and any of our other systems as well. I tend to review a lot of the requests myself at the moment, and actually do a lot of the implementation as well. So Salesforce is a totally new system for Aireon, which means that we are still rolling out, features to users. We're still adapting to how the business works and making sure that Salesforce is really usable for our user base.
Okay, excellent. So there's a lot in there that I hope to unpack further. And really how this came about was I was kind of scrolling through LinkedIn and your post about, and I have it on my screen here, how to stand out from the crowd in a saturated market. That really caught my attention because just at a glance and going through the different slides that you had embedded inside of that LinkedIn as well, a lot of that really resonated with me and what I'm seeing in the landscape of where things are heading with AI and the importance of soft skills. And you even alluded to a lot of that in that intro that you just walked through there. So can you tell me more about the motivation of that post and what you're trying to convey as far as your best advice for how someone can stand out in a crowded market?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's no secret that Salesforce have done a great job with education, right? It's a fantastic platform that they've built with Trailhead. Everyone can learn Salesforce for free. I am a fully self-taught Salesforce user. I've only ever attended two Salesforce training sessions, actual official ones, both for CPQ and both paid for by employers. They're completely, I would say, unattainable for a normal person to pay for. They're quite expensive. And so everything else I've learned has been completely self-taught. So there's no secret that it's easy to start learning Salesforce if you have the motivation. What's difficult is actually getting experience and being able to apply your knowledge to a real life situation. And I think having soft skills is really, really important to be able to have conversations with people, understand business requirements, present information back to stakeholders in an engaging and exciting way. Because although we all love Salesforce and, all of us who work with it, we think it's a great system, not everybody thinks the same way we do. And we need to make sure that we are engaging our users and so that they really understand the value that the system is going to provide for them. So not only do we have to be technically competent and capable, we also need to be a little bit salesy. We need to be able to sell the system to people to make them understand why it's valuable, or else people just simply won't use it. And then you won't really have made a difference in your company.
I see. Okay. So in that, you mentioned as well HubSpot, not only Salesforce, but HubSpot. And this is kind of an approach that I like to call mostly cloudy, or at least partly cloudy as far as your career, rather than just being all the eggs in the Salesforce basket. Not that Salesforce is going anywhere, but I think that having more than one cloud skill set, as far as that beyond the technical or the hard skills, is important. So where are you seeing that from where you sit as far as any other tools in addition to Salesforce? And that might be something as basic as Microsoft Excel or something more obtuse or not so well known that you have found that could be a valuable and sought after skill set for those looking to stand out.
Absolutely. I mean, you said it there, Microsoft Excel. If you don't know how to manipulate data in Microsoft Excel, you will struggle with certain things with Salesforce. I, on a regular basis, have to extract and manipulate potentially thousands of records, to look up, for example, IDs or information. And you need to be fairly proficient with Excel to be able to do that. So that's definitely, I would say, one skill set that's needed. And it's really interesting that you mention about all the different sort of, I'll say Salesforce adjacent technologies. So things that aren't necessarily, you know, native solutions, but that plug into Salesforce and utilize Salesforce data. It's really important to be able to understand those integrations. I don't personally have a ton of, you know, hard skills on HubSpot, but I understand what the system does. I understand what the integration needs from Salesforce. And I think it's really important for a lot of other tools as well. You know, I've worked at places where DocuSign was integrated, or there's another, you know, there's other document generation tools. And it's very important to be able to utilize not only Salesforce, but these additional tools and utilize them to the best of the system's ability. Because if you're only using them for one use case, the company is not going to be getting a massive ROI on those purchases. So it's up to you as a systems owner or the go-to-market systems person or analyst to be able to maximize the value that your company has, you know, they bought a tool, maximize the value of it for your users.
Okay, awesome. So yeah, that data wrangling is very important. And then as well, you mentioned go-to-market or GTM, and I was looking at your LinkedIn profile, wanting to learn more about you because just your post resonated so much and aligned with so much of what I believe as well. And there's some things in there that I noticed as far as a background in retail as well. And I think that that experience likely, if I had to guess, is serving you well today in doing things around configured price quote or revenue operations. Can you speak about your formative years of your career and not so much what you thought you would be doing in the future, but how that shaped you? And I think this could be an inspiration for those looking to break in or to niche down into a specialty as well that have a similar background or experience. So what has that impact been and what have you drawn upon from those early years?
Yeah, absolutely. So I did start out working in retail when I was a teenager. It was a great first job that I had when I lived in Texas. And it was a really good experience for me. It definitely brought me out of my shell. I was probably more of an introverted kid, more nerdy, you know, in like the advanced classes and things like that. And I think it really brought me out of my shell, and I was able to communicate with people because I had to. So, you know, you have to speak to people when you're ringing them up at the register. You have to, if you're the greeter at the front of the store, you have to say hello. So it's very much a, you need to do this as part of your job. So at first it's really scary and I hated it. And I hated speaking to people, you know, that I didn't know, but eventually you just get over it. And, you know, the more times you do it, the less you care about, you know, people ignoring you, because it's going to happen. And it's a really, for me, it was a really good lesson on resilience. You know, you learn a lot when you work with people, and you have to work with customers, and no matter what organization you're in, you have to work with customers. So even myself, my customers are not external, they're internal. I have to work with people every single day. And I have to be able to explain things to them, communicate with them. And I think I learned a lot of communication skills when I was working in retail, because just because you say something the way that you think makes sense, somebody else might not accept it that way. So you have to learn how to communicate with all different types of people. So that's really, that was really important for me. The pricing, funnily enough, the pricing analyst side of things didn't really factor into my decision to move into Aptus, which was formerly Aptus, now called Conga. When I joined the Salesforce ecosystem, it was just a happy coincidence, I would say, that I actually joined. I joined on a graduate program. So I was completely brand new to the Salesforce ecosystem, had never even used Salesforce before, didn't know what it was, didn't know what CPQ was when I joined Aptus. And I just threw myself into learning it. So yeah, I went directly from retail when I was out of retail, I was doing operations for a small company in Texas. But when I decided to move to London, which is a whole other story, I just applied for a ton of different jobs, and Aptus was the one that I got. And I just, yeah, loved being in the ecosystem. It was fantastic for my career, and I have never left the ecosystem since. It's been almost 9 years.
Excellent. Yeah. So I was also looking at the certifications that you have, and you attained, it looks like, your admin cert back in February of 2016. So that informs me that you're not one of my former students, because my first course didn't come out till March of 2016. So, and have you ever taken any of my courses or not? And it's fine if you haven't.
I haven't. And I have really tried to utilize Trailhead, but of course there's so much other valuable content available, you know, in the Salesforce ecosystem. So absolutely. And I think especially if you don't have a background in systems, or, you know, that sort of maybe Salesforce doesn't make as much sense to you. It sort of made a lot of sense to me. It's quite logical. I understood it fairly quickly, but I think having someone help you learn that from the start is really, really valuable. Someone who can communicate it in a way that makes sense. I think if I'd actually taken a course, I probably would have had my certification a lot sooner, because I joined Aptus in 2015, January. So I had, it was almost a year before I got my certification. So okay. I might have obtained it sooner had I taken a course review.
Well, you know, I think you did the traditional path that is what is intended, which is to actually get the experience. And then you're so experienced that you pass the test. And so it's this odd area that I reside in, to where we accelerate that. And that being where not everyone has the chance to get that experience. And so, but one thing that I'm noticing that you're mentioning often is communication. And that is something that you learned early in the retail side of things, and it's serving you well now. And that is the one skill that I've seen listed on every job requirement or job posting, and that's near universal, is communication. Mm-hmm. And then these other soft skills you've mentioned as well, such as collaboration, and that's one that I see in your particular role that you've had to develop that skill set to be able to be where you sit now, you know. So how can individuals work on those soft skills and improve in those areas? Because those are the skills that are becoming more and more important in this age of AI, frankly.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of different ways that people can improve their soft skills, but one of them is just simply by doing. So, you know, a lot of times I think people will join calls at their company with their camera off, not saying anything on meetings. When you're doing that, you're not practicing your ability to communicate. You're not presenting yourself on camera, right? I'm sitting here on camera. I'm sitting up tall. I'm speaking loudly. It's very important how you come across. So I actually spent a year as a sales engineer last year at a Salesforce. I was, like I said, adjacent sort of company. And being a sales engineer for a year really, really improved my communication skills. So you have to be able to very clearly articulate what you're trying to say, what you're getting across to the customer, and be able to do obviously a product demo without them losing interest. And it's a very critical skill set to have, not only for sales engineers, but for anyone who uses the Salesforce platform. So for example, I do some mentoring in the Salesforce space as well. I work with Supermums in the UK. And I had a mentee who recorded a video for me. So she had to record a video about how to create list views. Very simple, shouldn't have been more than 2 minutes. It was five, her first video was 5 minutes. It was very long, very long-winded. She was talking about a lot of different things that didn't really need to be in there. So I worked with her to cut that down to make sure when she was communicating, it was impactful. It was useful for the users. It held their attention. She was engaging. And she did a second try with me and it was perfect. So I think the key there is to, you know, if you can't be on calls too often, film yourself, practice at home, talk to your family, talk to your friends. But I think we're losing some of this in-person communication through Slack, through Teams, you know, through texting all the time. So it's really important to have that face-to-face or even video communication with people, and to really practice that skill set, because it isn't easy to come across as engaging and exciting on video, especially, and then as well as in person.
Excellent. Excellent advice. So another thing that caught my eye in your post, there was a lot there. There were a lot of things that caught my attention. You mentioned that Forbes magazine had pegged revenue operations as the fastest growing job segment. Can you tell me more about that? And I'm not terribly familiar with revenue operations. And so
absolutely,
that was interesting to me. So can you tell me more about RevOps?
Yes, of course. So RevOps really takes the whole sales process into account. So it's looking at the revenue, the marketing side of things as well as sales. So we've all heard of sales operations. You know, it's sort of a standard function in any SaaS or any real business, to be honest. You always have sales operations there. But when you talk about revenue operations, it's really looking at the whole end-to-end process. So when we talk about lead to cash, which is something else that there's an article I wrote on salesforceben.com. If you type in lead to cash in search, it should come up. But lead to cash is so, so important because it's looking at what are we doing at the point where our leads are coming into the website or through a campaign or from an event? And then how are we getting them through our sales process and making sure we're actually collecting that revenue on the other side? So we don't necessarily look at the finance aspect of things in terms of, you know, actual revenue collection and, you know, revenue recognition from an actual accounting standpoint in RevOps, but we're definitely on the lead to cash process. So, you know, basically till an order gets closed or an opportunity gets closed, what are we doing up until that point? And that's really why I think the sector is growing so quickly, because there's so many new tools on the market now for revenue operations. There's a whole platform, there's, you know, companies that are building a platform for revenue operations. And it just makes sense to be really have a really cohesive process from the moment a customer or a prospect engages with you to the moment that they actually, you close the deal with them.
Okay. Does that take into account the service side of things as well, to where you kind of loop back through and kind of feed that into the lead process once again, or the marketing side?
In service, what do you mean exactly?
Well, like Service Cloud, or once you've attained a customer and you're trying to retain them. I've seen some organizations, and some of it has to do with account-based marketing. I was fascinated with that about 3 or 4 years ago, and flip your funnel and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's expanding your footprint inside an organization. Yeah. So does RevOps go into that side of things as well and encompass that, or not so much?
I think it depends on the organization. So it doesn't for me personally at the moment, in terms of our organization, but we definitely have a hand in the customer success side of things. So just like you said, it's really important for customers to be happy with the product, to renew, to upsell. Obviously, incremental purchases along the way are really, really valuable. So yes, maybe as like an adjacent sort of team to the people that actually do the support. So definitely the support side doesn't really fall under RevOps, but we do need to be informed. And as part of the analysis that our team does, it's very important for us to understand, you know, how many tickets do customers have open? If they have a ton of tickets open, are they less likely to renew? Are they within within 6 months of their renewal and they've opened, you know, 50 tickets in the last few weeks? That's obviously going to impact their renewal. So yes, from that perspective, we do need the data, but we don't necessarily get involved in that sort of side of systems or implementation, I would say.
Right. I think that opens up this broadening horizon for hopefully my student base and those that are not students as well, as far as job titles to look for, search for, keywords. So many people search for Salesforce administrator and they stop there and maybe not look for other things because that's either the certification they're striving for or the one that they've attained. And I've read somewhere, I don't recall, it may have been on Salesforce, Ben. I want to talk to you more about your writings there as well. But I've seen that only 7% of jobs in the ecosystem are for Salesforce administrators. So that means that, you know, I have this huge audience of now, I don't know how many, like 300,000 plus students, many of which, like half, have done that admin certification. And a percentage of those, I don't know what percentage, are basically asking the question now is what's next. So could you kind of list off, because I think you communicate this very well as far as, and you're educating me on RevOps and then customer success and kind of broadening my scope. Can you help amplify that out to those that I reach as far as helping them to have smarter searches for jobs?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. And you're right. The Salesforce admin role, I would say, I don't want to say it's dead because it's not dead, but it's definitely evolving and it's been evolving for a long time now. So there's a ton of different roles that you can take on when you have the Salesforce admin cert and others as well. One that I actually really think is valuable for almost every admin that I don't even think you need the admin certification for anymore is the business analyst one. So being able to understand and have being able to speak to your customers, your internal customers, gather the requirements from them, translate them into systematic requirements, and then pass that potentially to a developer or even build it yourself with your, you know, your admin technical skill set is incredibly important. I cannot tell you how many times users will come to me. I need a field in Salesforce. Okay, well, what do you want to do with that field? What's the purpose of it? What's the outcome that you need? Oh, well, actually, I need to do X, Y, Z. Okay, well, then you actually need something else. You need a custom object. You don't just need a field. You need a whole custom object. So doing the business analyst cert is actually incredibly important. So Salesforce business analyst is definitely another job title that you can look for. Even if you don't have the business analyst cert yet, that's definitely one that will require Salesforce administrator skills. You can also go into project management. So Salesforce project managers, even if you, let's say you have a technical understanding of the configuration of the system, but you're incredibly organized, you like working with different groups of people, you don't mind, you know, sort of corralling the masses on a big project, you'd be a great Salesforce project manager. And having that technical knowledge, although you may not use it on a daily basis, is incredibly important as well. So project manager, business analyst, Salesforce consultant is the next one. So consultants have to do almost between the two, I'd say. They're a little bit between a project manager and a business analyst. You're customer facing. Usually you're at a consultancy, you're customer facing. You're listening to what the customer's challenges are, not only with their sales or their Salesforce system necessarily, but with their entire sales process. So you're understanding where they're having issues and where you could potentially slot in different solutions, technologies, processes, and make a really big difference. And having that Salesforce skill set, of course, is important to be able to translate those, you know, skills into, those challenges into solutions.
Excellent. Yeah, I was going to ask you about project management because you had mentioned that in your post as well. And then you also discussed this leap to leadership roles as well. And I think that you're kind of blazing that trail for yourself here. And what are some of your lessons learned as far as taking on the mantle and the challenge of becoming a leader? It's not for the faint of heart, I'm sure. And what were some of the doubts? What were some of the challenges? What's your best advice for those that feel they have it in them to lead others?
Absolutely. I have been an individual contributor for almost 9 years. And I decided when I took on this job at Arian that I was ready to take on a leadership role. The best individual contributors are not always the best managers. I think we all know that. Some people just flourish at being individual contributors. I think when you become a manager, you have to put your own, not career goals necessarily aside, but it's all about your team. So for me, it's all about my team. I want my team to have work-life balance. I want my team to, you know, be able to log off at the right time, be able to take an afternoon off unexpectedly if they need to. I have enabled my team to do that. If I don't get the time off, it's not a big deal for me, but I want to make sure my team does. So I think you have to put yourself on the back burner. And your team is the most important thing. I am always trying to develop them. I'm encouraging them to take time during the week to do personal development or professional development. You know, even though I don't necessarily follow all of those things, and I always tell them, do as I say, not as I do, because I want them to improve on their skills and be able to be confident in their role. And for me, my team doing a great job is really important to me. One of my first managers, actually, she works at Zuora now. She said to me once that she only wanted to have people on her team that were better than her. And that's always how I have tried to find people for my team. That is my ultimate goal, is that everyone on my team is performing, not performing better than me, but is better than me in some way, because that means I have a team of experts. I have an amazing team surrounding me, which for me then means I'm meeting all of my goals as well.
Excellent. Yeah, I love that, because I feel that way about teaching online. You know, I learned so much more from teaching and from getting feedback from, it's like the wisdom of the crowds, but everyone brings a perspective, and that really helps me in so many ways that are just not even describable. So, and then having that team focus as well, it's kind of like you're taking the role of a coach, you know, and absolutely, you are trying to move the ball forward and to win. And there's no I in team, and that's a cliche, exactly, but it's true. So I love that. And then as well, I mentioned Salesforce Ben and writing for that website. How did that come about? And what has been your most viral post or article or most has shown the most traction?
That's actually a really good question. So how it came about was I've actually known Ben for many years. So when the site started growing, they asked me to start doing some articles for them. This is before I became the sort of CPQ expert author that I am now. I started out just by doing some app assessor reviews. So those are more in-depth reviews of applications that are either 100% native or integrate with Salesforce. Really enjoyed it. I, again, communication, written communication, so important, being able to take that sort of technical information and really produce an article that's digestible for, you know, normal people and also people that are just looking for that type of solution. So, you know, if you're an administrator or a consultant at a company and your customer says, oh, I'm struggling with XYZ, you can find, you know, different applications. And then you think, oh, okay, I want to learn a little bit more about this. And so you can find, you know, those, some of them you can find on Salesforce Ben, and they're a much more in-depth review. So started out by doing that. And then as the site evolved, they wanted to have a group of 12, I think it's 12, maybe more now, expert authors on various different subjects. So my subject matter expertise is CPQ, having worked at Aptus for many years, and then managing the opportunity to order process at UiPath from an end user perspective, where we had Salesforce CPQ as well. So yeah, just through my many years of working with CPQ, I became the expert author on those topics. And I still do some of the app assessors every now and again as well. You'll see those pop up. I don't actually know which one would be my most viral post, only because I don't have access to the analytics. But I definitely have written a few about sort of CPQ Salesforce release management, which is really, really important. I actually did a post about that a couple of months ago, which I might turn into a carousel because that one was quite popular as well. But yes, I think probably the release management one, or maybe the underrated features for CPQ or CPQ features you should know about, okay, probably quite popular as well.
So speaking of analytics, have you been monitoring your LinkedIn analytics? And what's
that? I have.
Is that going up? I would imagine it's going up.
It is. Yes, it is. It goes up all the time. I mean, I posted a few days ago or almost 2 weeks ago now about 5 Salesforce sins. And that post absolutely went viral. I think it's still going. It has over 700 likes on it, which is more than any of my other posts.
Nice.
But it really resonated with people because we all have to do these things sometimes in Salesforce. I mean, the first sin on my list was configuring in production. Everyone knows you're not supposed to configure in production, but we all have to do it sometimes. Sometimes there is just, you know, a fire that you have to put out and you have to configure in production. So, you know, it's one of those sort of things that everyone jokes about. But I think that post really resonated with people because we have all had to do these things, but we don't like doing them, I guess.
Right. Love it. So I think, you know, I've got AI on the mind nowadays. I'm curious your take on just AI in general. And this is beyond the realm of Salesforce as well, of course. But what is your take on the craze of AI that's happening?
I think it's amazing. I mean, I'm really a big supporter of AI. I think it's really going to change the world and change how we work. But it will mean that soft skills are way more important now because, you know, we've all seen ChatGPT can write code and all sorts of, you know, things that I guess, you know, I'm not a developer, but if it could write code for me, and even Einstein GPT, I think, you know, that Salesforce are bringing out is going to be able to do certain areas of configuration for people. I personally can't wait because I would love to have someone doing the configuration for me because my job really is to speak to users. You know, I need to be speaking to them. I need to be enabling them. I need to be working with them constantly to make the system as valuable as possible. So for me, I can't wait till AI I can make almost a little clone of myself and I can get it to do my configuration for me, but I'm still designing what that solution is. I'm still understanding what the requirements are. And I think that's going to be the intermediary between users of the system and how it actually gets configured, because you still have to be able to translate that into a solution. AI can't do that. Could you imagine if you gave every salesperson the ability to configure Salesforce? It would be an absolute mess and everything would break. So there's always going to need to be, you know, a human intermediary layer, in my opinion, from a solutioning perspective and even an architecture perspective. But I think AI will just accelerate all of our jobs to be able to do that. I mean, I've worked at UiPath, which is a robotic process automation tool. So, you know, not necessarily AI. I mean, they have AI features and everything now, but even before AI was a big thing, they were automating a lot of jobs. We had tons of robots working in Salesforce. So for me, it's a little bit, I'm sort of used to that side of things. And I can't wait till it becomes even bigger.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm finding that and seeing in reports that have been released by entities such as IBM, as far as the rise of soft skills in the age of AI, and how STEM skills, while still important, are not the top of the list anymore. And it's the soft skills. And even thinking about the ability to prompt or communication skills and just the nuance of language is opening up this whole thought process for me of soft skills, not only with humans, but also with AI and collaborating with AI and humans and communicating effectively. And so I don't know if you have any thoughts or wisdom around that, as far as soft skills, not only on the human side of the fence, but also with AI, anything to add to that? Because I'm wrapping my mind around this right now.
I think we all are, to be honest. And I think it's the same as anything, right? When the iPhone came out, nobody had ever used a touchscreen phone before. Nobody had ever downloaded an application from the app store before, right? So it was all new for us. And now we all carry around our smartphones and we use them every single day. And we all know exactly what we're doing. I say we all, you know, sometimes I have to help my mom, but, you know, we all generally know how to use our smartphones when we didn't have those 20 years ago, right? I think the iPhone came out in 2007. So I think it's going to be a very similar type of adoption where we all need to understand how we can best utilize AI in both our personal and our professional lives. I mean, I personally can't wait for the day where I have a little AI assistant that reads all my emails, summarizes them for me, tells me what I need to do, because that would be so helpful. So I think AI is going to revolutionize our work, you know, how everybody works, but people are going to have to learn how to interact with it, how to adopt it. And that's where communication is so important, because companies that are building these AI tools need to be able to A, communicate the benefits of their, you know, what their tool does. They need to be able to convey the value and train the users on them. So it can't just be, oh, here's a bunch of features that we have, but you know, this is, and then you can just go and build it. They need to understand what that value, those benefits are, and then how they can actually make that happen for their company.
Excellent. Well, Alyssa, I've really enjoyed our talk, and I just want to lay the groundwork for any final words of wisdom you might have for those that happen across this video in the future. And anything else that you would like to highlight, and as well as always, how people can connect with you best?
Yeah, people can absolutely connect with me on LinkedIn. My surname is a little bit complicated, but you can find me on LinkedIn through Salesforce Ben. You can find my articles there, and you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I do a lot of mentorship. I'd say if you're in the Salesforce ecosystem and you're, you know, maybe new to it, try and find a mentor, maybe someone near you, someone in your company who might already be working with Salesforce. The Trailblazer community is a great place for people to reach out and get tips and, you know, and information and meet new people. And I would say Salesforce is purely, for me, it's something you have to be really motivated internally about. So, you know, if you're super motivated, you can learn anything. Salesforce is really there for the taking. So there's no limit to the, you know, where your career can go. I started out in strategic alliances. I wasn't even working technically with the product. And now I'm the head of go-to-market system. So you can absolutely shape and mold your career with Salesforce, even if it's not from a technical perspective.
Okay, awesome. Love it. I will link to your LinkedIn profile to make that easier for people to find you. So thank you so much, Alyssa. Really enjoyed our talk.
Me too. Thanks so much.